Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Agents of Mace. We are back to finally talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. This may be a week behind. We've had a lot going on, and we may be an agent down. Drew's got a lot going on in life right now, but all very good things. But we'll let him share all the news once he gets back on. And of course, he does all the editing, so he can probably work his editing magic if he wants to hop on and share his thoughts. But we're going to talk all things Quantumania, because this was a very interesting start to Phase 5. And I guess let's just go into initial reactions. So, Elisa, what was your first reaction after seeing this?
My first reaction was that it was fun. It definitely, like, we all saw that it wasn't getting, like, the best response from critics when it was released. But I was encouraged by the fact that every person that I knew, like, in real life who had gone to see it, were saying, it's not bad. It's just fun. It's not the kind of movie that critics are into. And so I was like, yeah, okay, I can feel optimistic about that. And so while I enjoyed it, I definitely understand criticisms of it. It wasn't as tight as most Marvel movies have tended to be. And I say that with the knowledge that the past couple, I think, have been a little bit of a mess. Interesting messes, occasionally, in the case of Thor: Love and Thunder, sometimes kind of a fun mess. And this one, I think, it kind of walks the line well enough to where it doesn't seem over the top and indulgent like Thor: Love and Thunder did. But it also took things a little bit further than Multiverse of Madness did in terms of setting up this new phase of the MCU. But as far as just watching it and liking it, yeah, I did. I mean, I love Scott. I love Paul Rudd. I did miss the characters who weren't here this time. Obviously, I think everybody did. And I think if I had one like really big criticism that I had to lob at it, it'd be that it doesn't feel like an Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, I agree there. I think that was a lot of the first reactions for those that got to see this a few days early than most. This was kind of described as a Star Wars film. And I can see that in a lot of ways. And I think most have meant that in a positive way, because you get a lot of that fun. You're not necessarily outer space, but you're in this whole new world.
With creatures.
With various creatures and life beings. And there are some that are very human-esque in appearance. And then there's some that are polar opposite of that. And just the world of how they go around. Like when we go to meet Lord Krylar, just that whole vibe of that restaurant bar area just has that kind of Star Wars type of vibe of like, you don't know who you're going to meet, who's going to be on your side, who's not on your side. It has that similar flow and vibe, and I like that. It makes it a good fun watch. But yeah, this missed for me. It missed a lot of elements that I liked within Ant-Man. I love Paul Rudd, but the humor just didn't work with me on this one, which was disappointing. So that's why I liked the first two movies. And I think that goes to what you said: the missing characters. Like we really needed
Luis,
yeah, we needed Luis to come. And it's basically what was mentioned, and I think you mentioned it in a past episode, was like doing the recap or something. Like that would have been perfect. And so with Quantumania, it's enjoyable. I think it's rewatchable. I think there's some interesting disconnects and missed opportunities with it. And a lot of it, I think, is just because they're trying to bite off more than they could chew. Because even the director kind of came forward and said he wanted to make this one more of an like Avengers Endgame experience. Mm-hmm. And it's fine, but I almost feel like potentially we could have used a little bit longer runtime to kind of build some depth, because the first 20 minutes is pretty rushed.
Yeah.
And like, it's a lot of things that we've seen before, and it kind of makes sense because so much of this movie is that family dynamic, because now we've got everyone together. We've got Scott Lang, we've got Hope Van Dyne, Cassandra, which is recast. We'll definitely go into that, because I've got some thoughts on Catherine Newton, her performance as Cassandra. I think that's where a lot of people had some issues. I had a lot of issues with Hank. With Michael Douglas. I don't know, there was something about his character in this, and I'm a big fan of Hank Pym, but like in this one, I didn't like it.
I think that comes down to he didn't really have anything to do. He was just sucked into the quantum realm.
Right.
And it felt like, and like, I love Michelle Pfeiffer. She is one of my favorite actresses for my entire life. She's wonderful. But they put a lot in this movie on Janet.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like some of that screen time and some of that emphasis should have been given to Hank and Hope, because they're the ones that we've been with this whole time. Like, it's called Ant-Man and the Wasp, and the Wasp is kind of barely in it.
And by exactly,
the Wasp. Janet is the Wasp too.
Right. You know, the Wasp that we've gotten to know, which is Hope, has what, maybe 7 minutes screen time, I think it feels like. Not much. Because like I said, going back to the beginning, it just felt so rushed, because now we're kind of essentially doing that catch up, the MCU classic catch up of, hey, what's Scott Lang been up to since all this stuff has happened? And, you know, it kind of focuses around, he's written a book, he's going on a book tour, Fame seems to be a big thing. Where was the podcast?
They did not mention his podcast, but I know I've mentioned this on previous episodes of the podcast, of our podcast, but I did pre-order the book.
Nice. I need to do, eventually we'll release a video, but I finally have my office painted and I'm slowly getting furniture in it. But yeah, I need a place to put that book. I need to get it as well. But you know, we got so many callbacks, right? Baskin Robbins, just kind of this really rapid, like, here's all these things that I've been up to, and I'm spending time with Cassie and Hope, and the whole family's here. But then we go into Cassie's character, which is basically this recreation of Scott Lang. She's going and getting into trouble, getting into prison, which feels like, you know, it was kind of expected, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's just a very formulaic thing to do, because we've seen it plenty of other movies outside of MCU.
Yeah. And the whole thing with starting with, you know, Scott has been doing these things, and essentially he's been enjoying fame since what happened in Endgame. It does a good job of setting up how this movie is addressing how it seems like Scott and some of the other OG Avengers they kind of feel like they're done. Like they did the thing, thing is over, but then younger people like Cassie are living in an entirely new world. And so she has got that kind of idealism that we're expecting from not only just young people, but from like heroes. And I think that it's smart for it to kind of have this conflict between the two of them that's based that way.
Yeah.
And I also do kind of wish that we had seen more of that playthrough in the movie, because we were jumping around for so many different things that I think that we lost that central focus being between Scott and Cassie.
Yeah.
Because we had to go off and we had to follow Janet, who's refusing to talk about the thing, even though she should just stop and be like, okay, there's a dude down here, he's dangerous, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
I hate when movies do that, when they withhold information for no reason just to build suspense. So right. That's my criticism.
This was trying to build that almost like this Voldemort-esque type vibe, right? It's like everyone and I do, and this kind of goes back into the Star Wars. I mean, and we'll definitely get into Kang here in a little bit, but I mean, Kang did kind of have this Darth Vader type vibe to him. Very powerful, very menacing. Everyone knows who he is. They don't want to talk about him. It's kind of like he's here, he's aware of everything. Just kind of, if you stay in your own lane, you'll be fine.
Yeah. And also, like, Jonathan Majors is one of the big time highlights of this movie. Just his presence is so like commanding, and I know I already said this on our Loki episodes, but he's so charismatic,
right?
And also he's just huge. Like, have you seen the like promo shots that have been out for him being in this new Apollo Creed movie?
Yeah,
his legs are as big around as my entire body. Like,
yeah.
There is no way, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, there is no way Scott could take him in a fight.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're just...
All
right,
it's about to die.
You got to say it. Paul Rudd, I feel like he's finally hit the point where he's starting to age. he just has that look now. He's looking like he's aging, finally.
He looks 27 now. We can all tell.
I don't know, Paul, then wrinkles of Sean, dude. Gotta get back. But I mean, he's Paul Rudd.
He needs to allow himself to gain 5 pounds every 10 years. That's what
he needs to meet up with
Iman does. She says that it fills out her wrinkles if she lets herself gain 5 pounds every 10 years.
Right. I know we're kinda going off tangent, but I've been following Hugh Jackman's post for training for Wolverine. And so, I mean, Paul, you know, hit up you, like 8,000 calories a day. Like,
but we all know that Hugh is going to emerge in a few months and he's going to have so many muscles. He can't move his neck in all directions.
Right.
It's ugh. Oh, Hugh, I'm so sorry, baby.
But
that's so much to put your body through.
Majors is he's a beast. I did go see Creed 3. And yeah, he's menacing in that as well. So he's kind of on this villain train right now. I'm curious to see how many villains he'll portray before he switches to like a good guy or something.
I give him about 2 years before he's in a rom-com.
All right. Oh yeah. 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 I want to see him. Like the if you look at the cast photos for Quantumania, he's like rocking like the nerdy glasses. Like, yeah, he needs to do the rom-com.
Yes.
We do get Randall Park. Very briefly, I'm glad we did get to see that because we did get to see that Scott and Jimmy had their dinner. I almost wish we got a little bit more of that because it was just like this photo op moment, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's so many like things that I wanted in this. Like one of the things from the previous movies that I appreciated was that it showed that Scott and his wife's new husband have a good relationship after the first movie. Like they become like bros.
Right.
And you know, obviously Luis and all of his buddies, how hard would it have been for them to get sucked into the quantum tunnel? Like, why couldn't they have been there?
Well, even to that point, David, I don't know if I can pronounce his last name. I'm so sorry, David Dashmashian.
He does a voice in this. Yeah,
he does a voice. So he is the only one that came back and he voices Veb.
But not the same.
I agree. Like, if anything, we needed them for an intro or even a post-credit scene would have been brilliant. Right.
They kept trying to make me care about these new characters.
Right.
And even though one of them was Chidiana Gonye from The Good Place, who is great, whom I love. I was just, I don't care. I wanted my other people. They could have been there as, you know, flat, stereotypical. They say two lines, they serve their purpose, and then they're gone. But instead, we had to spend a lot of time with them. And I commend them for trying to do something new and different. But at the same time, I wanted the old thing back. There's not even a heist in this movie. Not really.
Yeah, nothing like that.
Almost a tiny heist, but
yeah, because we do get so much of this is around the relationship between father and daughter that a heist would have been cool. right? Mm-hmm. Get see them like see the conflict, they're butting heads, but then they start working together to use their minds to come up with like, we've got to go steal something from Kang.
Their criminal minds.
Their criminal minds, exactly. Yeah. Because going back to how much is like rushed, you know, we definitely fall into the what seems to be the typical Marvel thing now of like, oh, the blip, you know, the blip was more or less mentioned again. We had all this time without everyone. So what did I do in that time? I learned everything about quantum physics and how to build these things in just like 5 years. And it's.
Yeah. And like Cassie is supposed to be like maximum 18 years old, right?
I would like think so. I don't know.
Like she is, yeah. She's still
she'd
a
have
kid.
To be like, yeah, under 21.
Yeah. And so she has mastered quantum physics since she was like young enough to be in grade school. I mean, I know there are kids who do that, yeah. But I don't know. It seems like a little bit of a stretch. Right. She is coming from a talented engineer dad, but that doesn't necessarily translate into you've got a brain the size of a planet. Yeah. You're going to be able to send a signal down into the quantum realm, which has never been done before.
Yeah. I mean, granted, it's kind of like I found all of Grandpa's old books, which probably spelled everything out. Where...
Yeah, and Grandpa starts, you know, being like, hey, I can help.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Hank's just kind of like, oh, you're doing that. I want to help. I want to play. I want to like, let's tinker and let's build stuff. And
yeah. And that's one of the things that like before this movie ever came out, what I was really suspecting, because I was expecting more consequences and stakes, is that I thought Hank was going to die. I was so sure that Hank was going to die. And it kind of like, I would not ever wish anything bad on Hank Pym or on Uncle Douglas, but, that would have been a reasonable consequence is if it was really him who was putting all this into motion and being reckless whenever he had every reason not to be after almost losing his wife that way.
Right.
Like,
right.
It would attract. It would have been a tragedy and a loss that they would have had to deal with from this point forward. And it's also kind of like, it's a staple of the genre. You lose the mentor at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't, and there weren't yet any really serious consequences for what happened, even though they went up against the new big bad in the MCU.
Yeah, I feel like if you look at the fan base, I think everyone was expecting someone was going to die in this.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that's just like, it just seems like if you look at phase four, I mean, outside of Wakanda Forever, everything's kind of been more up and cheery and things like that. And we kind of already know that, like with the upcoming Guardians 3, we know that that's going to be a more deeper emotional movie. I think everyone kind of expecting this was going to be as well, because generally when you have a big bad, they're going to do something really terrible and it's going to set the motion of like, everyone's going to, you know, what's going on. We got to get together. We got to take them down and avenge basically. Didn't get that so much in this one. Again, it's just like the beginning and end were just so different than any other Marvel movie we've seen. But we get to the quantum pretty quickly. I think we're what, like 20, within the first 20, 30 minutes, we're already all in the quantum realm.
Mm-hmm.
And even still then, it almost still felt incomplete of a movie because the graphics were pretty rough, at least from my perspective. Like, I found them to be kind of difficult to watch. You could tell it was heavy green screen. Mm-hmm. I think once you get into the second half of the movie, everything works itself out. But yeah, again, we're just kind of rushing to the quantum realm where all of a sudden we're seeing all these things, these new things, and trying to absorb like, well, how did we get here? How do we get out? Where do we go? And basically, this is where we get Janet to take center stage. And I feel like this is kind of when Hope is like, okay, we'll see you like at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I'm just going to go over here. I've got my Capri Sun and my string cheese, and I'm going over here.
Yeah. There's like so much of this, the second act, it's just like, wait, where's everyone else? Everyone just got sidelined. And then we kind of find out that Cassie's got a suit. It's kind of brought up, but doesn't get the suit on until later. And then at this point, we're basically getting all these new people. And around this time, once we get into the realm, we do get the early signs of MODOK.
Yeah, there's a MODOK in here.
Yeah. Corey Stahl has returned, and now he's MODOK.
And it's horrifying. Like, well, it's not, it was not pleasant to look at.
Yeah, if you look at the you can Google this and find the grid. You can search like the MODOK cast grid or something, and you can see like all the animations, all the versions of it, and it's polar opposite. But I rewatched these Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp again, like right before this, primarily because like my kids wanted to watch them. But it kind of all makes sense. If you look at the end of Ant-Man, the final moments when he's kind of like getting phased out, like his head never really shrinks with his body. It just kind of like his body kind of shrinks in and then he's gone. And that's kind of how they set it up. Like that happens and he's thrown into the quantum realm and they find him and basically fix him up to become MODOK.
Yeah, like it tracks, but it certainly didn't make it easier to look at.
Yeah.
And like that's not shade at Corey Stoll either.
Right.
It's just a weird look.
Yeah. And I like Corey Stoll. I like him. I will say, like, in terms of like the action moments, there's definitely one of the last fights with MODOK I really enjoyed. Because he's got a lot of cool gadgets and tools that he's able to use, but beyond that, it's very different. It's I don't know, didn't hit for me.
Yeah, they gave him a little redemption arc, which was nice. And everybody else, I'm not going to spoil the line for people who haven't seen it. Everybody else hates what Cassie yelled at him to get him to be a good person. I didn't mind it. I laughed really hard when she said that. Is it the cleverest line ever written? No. Is it what an 18-year-old girl would tell him to get him to, you know, straighten up? Probably. Yeah, it was certainly unexpected for is it Darren? I think it is Darren.
Yeah, Darren Cross.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was Darren or Derek, but Darren. Yeah. To pop up as MODOK in this. And whenever we saw like that little 2 seconds of MODOK in the trailer, I was kind of halfway expecting it to be Patton Oswalt because he's the one who was on the TV series. Yeah. But we also know that Patton is voicing a different character in the MCU that we saw palling around with Harry Styles at the end of The Eternals.
Right.
So maybe they just didn't want to double up on Patton Oswalt. I don't know. Or maybe they planned this from the beginning. Maybe it was always the idea to bring Darren back as MODOK. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm very curious on that if that was any of the initial plans.
Or maybe they just love Corey and wanted to have him in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this kind of goes into this, you know, you don't know what's going to happen in the quantum realm. Like, It's just such a fascinating place that it's one like I wish we could spend more time in, because I don't know, there's a lot that goes on there that I feel is still kind of an issue with where the MCU has been going with the whole like multiverse. Like it's still like we're still in this stage of like trying to explain like what it is and things like that, when I feel like we've gotten that a lot and it seems to be very different, and it's not, I don't know, I just kind of need it to eventually come together soon and just kind of be done with re-explaining the multiverse.
I have decided to not amend my understanding past what we had from Loki, which is Sylvie broke it.
Yeah.
That's all that I've been carrying in my mind. Like, yeah, obviously there are other ones. Sylvie broke it and now everything is wrong.
Right. So we're in the quantum realm and we get to meet the freedom fighters. So again, it's a while until we get Kang. Once Kang hits the screen, he definitely gets plenty of screen time, but there's a lot of moving around, meeting all of these new characters, getting to know them before we're even introduced to our villain. But we do kind of have the team split up where Janet's wanting to go meet Krylar. And then we've got Scott and Cassie who eventually meet the Freedom Fighters. And here's where we meet Veb, which was a very fun character. Drink the ooze. It's a very fascinating little being where it's kind of made of ooze, but if you drink it, it kind of allows you to communicate basically communicate with everyone.
Yeah. Every sci-fi franchise has a weird workaround for the fact that all these things know how to speak the same language. Yeah. And this movie is ooze.
Which is so wild, but I mean, I guess I'm for it. You know, I'm a big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan. So the turtles were created with ooze. So I guess it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a big Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan. So I'm familiar with this. They had the Babelfish.
Yeah. You're right. Yep. So yeah, we meet all of these various beings who all have various abilities. So, I mean, this kind of gets into, are they all mutants? You know, is this kind of go into more of like this X-Men-esque realm? Because we've got telepath, just various things like that. But, you know, essentially here's where we're kind of getting to understand of like who, you know, they're fighting for something. They're trying to take back what was taken from them. Learn about MODOK at this point and kind of learn about Kang as well. When we meet Kang, I'm glad they kept that line in there where once he meets Ant-Man, he basically says, "Have I killed you before?" And I know that was like a big moment from like one of the very early Comic-Con trailers that for some reason was never released in an actual trailer, which boggles me because that was such a cool moment. Mm-hmm. And such a standout moment for Kang. But I guess I'm glad they kept it for the movie. But I mean, that was kind of intense. That just shows you like what, you know, he's been around, like he's, you know, time means nothing to Kang. He's, you know,
he is simply exhausted for having murdered everyone multiple times over.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get learn more about his technology, and essentially that's kind of, I guess, what, like you said, the heist element of it, right? He's got a piece of technology that he needs to get out of the quantum realm, and he did connect with Janet when she was trapped there, so we do know that they have a relationship. You know, it kind of hints at some things. You know, that's been a big question that he brought up a lot is, was it a romantic relationship?
I would like to think that her only quantum hookup was Bill Murray.
Was Bill Murray.
But I mean, also, you got Bill Murray on one hand and Jonathan Majors on the other.
Yeah.
Come on, Janet.
There's no telling what Janet did down there.
She was just having fun. It was her rum springo.
All right. But we do get some good moments with Janet and Kang. So we do know the context there around their relationship and quickly learning about, you know, she picks up on his motives and understands that he may not be who he's saying he is. He seems to be potentially more of a villain, and basically just takes like this orb that he needs, and the Kang's mission now is to like, how do I get that back so I can get out of here? And that's kind of where we get into the final act of this movie, is everyone teaming up to make sure that does not happen. I mean, it just, I don't know, Kang's like already out there building his army, like it's just, you get, this is where I think more of that Star Wars-esque elements really comes into play, because he's got his own troops that he's created all over the place. You get Bill Murray's character that's just kind of like that, looking out for myself. You know, whatever helps me advance is what I'm going to do. So, like, he could have been cool at the beginning, but, you know, he's just like the backstabber, basically.
He's Bill Murray from Groundhog Day and Scrooge at the beginning. Yeah,
basically fuse those together.
Pre-redemption arc.
Yeah. I was reading, I guess he has a connect. I didn't know much about Krylar. I should have looked more into him. He's known as the steward of all assassins.
Golly.
And in the comics, he's a green skinned alien.
I guess I couldn't talk him into that.
No. Yeah, everyone's wondering if he does return, will he have the green skin?
Yeah, we didn't get to spend a lot of time with Krylar. It was still like a fun cameo, though, until everything goes to pot in their weird Star Wars restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the fight sequences that we get near the end were very different. It really reminded me of like some of the Spider-Man fight sequences we get with Mysterio. It just had that same kind of vibe to it in ways where you get, I don't know, it was just quantum fights. It was really weird. Multiple Scots.
Multiple Scots. It was another kind of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing, because whenever they're mm-hmm. in the infinite improbability drive, they just start seeing stuff that's weird and random that they don't understand because their brain is melting.
Yeah.
It was like that. Yeah, that scene. My favorite part of that scene was definitely whenever they had Baskin-Robbins Scott show up. And one of the Scots is like, does he have ice cream? From like way back in the back. That killed me. That was my favorite part of the whole movie.
So that was really fun. There was moments where it was like a little out there and weird, but like when you get the whole like ant type vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And even what Hank does at the end, bringing in all the ants, was pretty cool. But throughout all of this, I think the other things that were really fascinating to me was like, Scott would either shrink or he would go into Goliath mode, and it was like not a big deal, right? So that's fascinating, like how much has changed since the last time, because it just seemed like when he'd go in Goliath mode, it would just like he'd be done.
Yeah,
he was just going.
Yeah, this time he only mentions that you get hungry when you're big. Yeah, it's especially since he hasn't been doing this a lot lately. You'd think that it would be more taxing on him and more difficult because he's out of practice. He hasn't been doing Ant-Man stuff. He's been doing Scott stuff.
Right. And especially going up against a villain like Kang. That was just like, I don't know. It was hard. Some of that's a little hard to buy, like how he's able to keep going like that.
Yeah, like Scott, it was never the one that I expected to die in this. But whenever it showed him initially getting stranded in the quantum realm at the end, I thought that was for real. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have made sense. If you've got a character like Scott going up against somebody powerful like Kang, that I feel like that maybe should have been, because that would have been a big indicator for fans. Like, this is why you don't tango with this person. This is why you don't mess with this stuff. But yeah, they pretty quickly resolved that, and then he's back out essentially reenacting the opening of the movie after, like, Kang should have just physically destroyed him and didn't, right? Because ants. I do hope that that's planning a joke for a future movie whenever the Avengers are having to fight Kang, and then Scott's like, just use ants, it worked that time, I promise.
With reading like some of these Ant-Man comics, that just kind of makes sense, and I could see them doing that. It just kind of fits in with the Ant-Man comedy. Once we get into some of these final moments, I think that this is where I struggled with Cassie's character, because I don't know. There's just something like she just didn't fit in with everything. I think, and I don't know if this has to do with like the script she was given or the roles, but like, I don't know. There's just moments because she has a standout moment where she gets on this intercom and she's basically trying to like bring everyone together. And I don't know. It just wasn't as impactful as I think it could have been.
Yeah. And I wouldn't blame this actress. I remember watching her in Freaky and thinking that she was terrific in that. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe there was a missed opportunity here though, because the actress that they had cast as Cassie in Endgame, mm-hmm. first of all, like I've seen a lot of people saying this would have been a huge break for her in her career. And I agree that would have been wonderful if they'd have brought her back and it probably would have opened a lot of doors for her. But also I think that casting that less experienced actress would have actually brought a lot of vulnerability to Cassie that I think her character needed. So I would have been interested to see that take on mm-hmm. her. I didn't think that this was a bad performance by any means, but it was definitely a very, very different feel for the character than we've seen before. And it makes their relationship feel different. And of course, relationships change whenever mm-hmm. your daughter is not 6 years old or 10 years old anymore. But still, it definitely, it was a weird fit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the more disappointing moments I had with this one is I think that could have been so much stronger. And especially if we're kind of going into like the Young Avengers, you know, maybe she'll shine more there when she's hanging out with, you know, other superheroes her age, and it's not so much of the family dynamic. But yeah, essentially we get into, you know, what the director is going for, an Endgame-esque final battle, as you're getting the Freedom Fighters with the Ant family, everyone just kind of getting together to go up against Kang and try to take him down. Mm-hmm. And I see this is one of those like I'm ready to watch it again because I want to rewatch the ending because it's seems like it happens so fast. I can't really remember like what happened and what didn't happen with Kang in those moments. And this is one of those moments where we get Hope kind of coming back into play where it was just like, oh, she's still around. This is like I had already forgotten all about that she was in this movie, right? Because everyone gets back into like out of the quantum realm, but Ant-Man's, you know, trying to sacrifice himself so he can save his family and save the world. But Hope comes back to save him, which is great. But then it's like when this happens, where was she the rest of the movie? Like we needed her so many times. Because I loved how they worked together in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I don't know, the Wasp is so cool and just, you want to see them together.
Yeah. They've got great chemistry and they separated them for the whole movie.
Right.
Not cool.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like probably could have gotten some better jokes when you've got Hope kind of in the background, like, you know. I don't know. She could have like been that one to kind of like talk to your daughter, like y'all need to work this out. And I don't know.
Yeah.
So much more there. And then we get the strangest ending ever where it's kind of like we're back into this reality. But now Scott's kind of in his head. Like, it's like, we stopped him, right? He's not going to come back. Is he? Did we free him? Did we stop him? Is he still there? He's just very unsure of like what he went through and what the outcome was. And then it ends.
And so I'm going to guess that Scott has developed crippling anxiety that will hopefully pop up in a future movie. And we did get a couple of post-credit scene. We got mm-hmm. one where we got to see all the Kangs just Kanging, having fun. And I'm pretty sure I saw a He Who Remains in there.
Possible that he was in there. And we can, there's one theory that I read that I really liked. we can talk about in just a second. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting extra credit to get, is that we get all the Kang variants that are basically having a powwow over Kang the Conqueror. And then what was the other one? I've already forgotten what it was.
The other one was Loki and...
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And Mobius going to see one of the Kang variants at what looked like an old-timey kind of magic show.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if this is just a scene from Loki season two. Because it seems like it would kind of fit in the narrative. And they did confirm that it was the Loki crew that filmed it. They said that it was shot totally separately in a different country. And they added it to the post credits of this. So that was good, because they haven't given us any freaking scraps about Loki season two, which we've been waiting for, all of us, me. So it was a nice little scene. It's good to see the boys back in action.
I remember now. I wish we gotten more of that. Because it's getting me hyped for Loki. But yeah, I think what we're getting here is some big moments with... I'm curious what's all going to happen with all the various Kang variants. And it seems like potentially we could get like one Kang. Maybe it's going to be Kang the Conqueror that's going to try to take them all down, because I feel like they're going to get in his way potentially. But the theory that I've saw is there's one comic timeline where one of Kang's variants is Victor Timely. And Timely's like has a big role. Basically this inventor and does a lot with time. But I think the theory is that Kang was able to go back and basically kill Victor Timely, and then he's going to pretend to be Victor Timely, and that he's going to work his way back into the variants that way. Is the theory. So the theory was like, I believe you do see Victor Timely there with all the variants, but people think that are thinking like that's not Timely, that's actually Kang the Conqueror, that he's just going to sit there with them all and just wait for his moment.
That is an interesting theory. It was fun to see all of the different versions that they've cooked up of Kang. Although it also did, and I think I saw somebody post this, because it was very similar to the thought that I had, that it looked like they had taken over a party city. Mm-hmm. Just kind of clean them out of all their stuff. So one of the things that I'm thinking for the future movies is, how are they going to, are they going to have just a few different Kangs that they kind of develop and flesh out and we get to know them? Or is it just going to be where they're like a monolith and they're all working together? I guess that will all just have to reveal itself in due course.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to know what to trust on the internet webs, because there's already so many different things, where whether it's a fan theory, versus some kind of news source, especially because one of the Kang variants is it Ramatut or Rotmantut? If I'm pronouncing it correctly. Which the latest things I've been seeing around that is that variant will go up against Moon Knight.
Oh,
okay.
I'm just going to be keeping Jonathan Majors super busy.
Yeah. I could see that, and that would make sense. Another big thing about Kang is that there is a version of him that is Nathaniel Richards, which has connection to Reed Richards. So we do know that, and especially because we know time is such a big element in this, we know that Kang with the Fantastic Four is going to make sense in some way. So I would expect that we're probably going to get Kang, or some version of Kang with the Fantastic Four. But I know if we're going into Secret Wars, another big thing is that it's not only Kang, but it's Doctor Doom as well. So that also brings me to question, when is Doctor Doom going to come into play? But we're in a new face. and especially since they've announced, or Marvel's announced, that they're going to kind of slow things down a bit and spend more time to get the visual effects better, and and that. Very curious to see how this is all going to build out. I thought the visual effects, especially the first half of this movie, was just pretty bad. It was bad. And it's one of these, like, I wonder if they'll correct them before it comes out to like Disney Plus, because I know they've kind of done that with some past movies as well, but.
And they could let them cook a little longer than put them up on the platform.
Yeah. But overall, yeah, like, I mean, at the end of this, I agree with what you said at the beginning. Like, definitely not anywhere as one of my favorite of the Marvel movies, but I didn't think it was like that bad. I mean, the critics on this went pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And even the box office, I mean, this had a pretty significant drop, which was pretty wild, and especially seeing that like Majors has two movies in theaters right now. Mm-hmm. So everyone was expecting with Creed 3 that would up, like, oh, he's also in a Marvel movie, let's go check that out. But I don't think the numbers really reflected that. Mm. And I don't know if it's just superhero fatigue with everyone or what, but I'm very curious to see what's going to happen, because it does. I agree with a lot of like the film Twitter world, where it just seems like we're in the state of what's happening with Marvel, and then they're going to release something else and it's going to be awesome, and it's mm-hmm. just going to be this back and forth thing. So we'll know more as we get into phase 5.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different factors that I think could lead to the box office. One is that if fans are kind of meh on it, like a lot of those sales are from people going back to see movies like this again. And if they're not going back again for that, and also because it's going to be on Disney Plus in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That can definitely eat into sales. But
yeah,
I think that you're right. We just have to wait for the next really, really great thing to be released. And I'm not really sure of what that's going to be. I mean, I know that the Marvels comes out later this year, but I also know that the Marvels keeps getting pushed back and back and back, and that's making me be like, what's going on over there, sis?
I don't know if that has anything to, I think that a lot of that has to do with the visual effects.
It might. I hope it's not like reshoots, because they put it together like, oh my lord, we have done poorly.
I hope not. But if anything, I'm ready for Loki.
Yes, we're all ready for Loki. We're all excited to see what happens this season on Loki.
Yep. And I'm sure we'll get back into Jessica Jones on later episodes. I know we need to wrap this up, but the last big thing that was announced today that I definitely wanted to mention was that we have Jon Bernthal has announced that he's coming back as the Punisher in Daredevil Born Again. So...
Oh, that's what all those boys were posting.
Yep. Big fan of his. I'm glad that he's sticking with the role as the Punisher. So I definitely wanted to make note of that, because I'm pretty hyped about that, and gets me even more excited to see the upcoming Daredevil series. So I guess let's rank Ant-Man. We can close this one out.
Okay. So. This one was my least favorite Ant-Man. I think that the first one is still my first favorite Ant-Man, and the second one is my second favorite Ant-Man.
Yeah. I don't think this hit the standards as the first one. I just really enjoy that one. But I'd probably put this one a little bit above the second one. So, you know, for me, like, I would give Quantumania a good probably 3.5 out of 5. I think it's pretty solid. It's very entertaining. When Kang's on screen, you're just glued to the screen, but there's some noticeable things that I think could have been improved overall, but mm-hmm. I definitely want to check it out again. Hopefully I can find some time and see it in the theater before it hits Disney Plus. Cause this is one, I mean, it's a Star Wars-esque world. Like, there's a lot going on and you kind of got to see it on a big screen, but I'm sure we'll watch this quite a bit once it hit Disney Plus. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for everyone listening. Be sure to like and subscribe. We'll share all the links. You can find this on podcast stations. You can find this on YouTube. We're trying to get this out everywhere that we can to keep y'all up to date. And I guess we'll be back for Guardians 3.
Yep. Guardians 3
pretty soon, but between then we'll be back with more on Jessica Jones and
Secret Invasion. I think,
when is that?
I think that's supposed to be before Loki.
Is that before Loki? Okay.
Yeah, I think it should be pretty soon.
Okay, I'm okay with that. Yeah, yeah. The last Marvel Marvel company update, I think, was what, Secret Invasions, Loki's are for sure things this year, series wise. So can't wait to talk about those. All right. Well, until next time, we'll be back with more Marvel.